This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 3rd, 2017. I'm Caleb Brown. The rise of China has so-called economic nationalists all a-Twitter, but many of the concerns over China's economic growth wrongly consider trade as win-lose rather than win-win. A new Cato policy analysis out today, Responsible Stakeholders, Why the United States Should Welcome China's Economic Leadership, is by Colin Grabo. It discusses the rise of China and the appropriate U.S. responses.
The current president has decided to withdraw the United States from the TPP. How does that change China's role with respect to international trade?
I think the surprising answer to that is that China is going to prove to be a positive role for international trade in the Asia-Pacific realm. It's undertaken a number of initiatives that I think will boost trade, free trade, and expanded trade more generally. That takes the form of the RCEP, which is the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. It includes 16 different countries, as well as a number of their infrastructure initiatives, such as the One Belt, One Road initiative, as well as the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, which started a few years ago.
So if you're standing aside, you're not an American, you're not Chinese, you're standing aside looking at whether or not the U.S. Should participate in the TPP. On balance, would you say that the U.S. withdrawal from the TPP actually enhanced free trade, or was it a net negative for free trade?
It was absolutely a net negative for free trade. One of the big draws of the Trans-Pacific Partnership was access to the U.S. market. And when you remove the United States from the equation, that's almost, I believe, some 40-something percent of the Trans-Pacific Partnership of the collective GDP. And without that allure, without that prize, countries are not willing to give as much ground on reducing their trade barriers without that potential payoff with the U.S. out of the game. So it's a loss for everybody.
So let's talk about the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. What is that and what countries are involved?
Sure. So the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership is a trade agreement that is being negotiated between the countries of ASEAN, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, which are 10 countries, and six other countries, which includes China, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, South Korea, I believe. It's 16 countries in total. And this agreement, it's not as far-reaching as the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The liberalization does not go as far, unfortunately, but it still is a very real step in the direction of free trade in the Asia-Pacific region, with a payoff that's been estimated by the Asian Development Bank in the region of $220 billion over 10 years, I believe.
All right. So that group, the RCEP, as you noted, the fact that the U.S. is out of TPP, China gets this opportunity to sort of reshape trade, at least within that region. What should the U.S. do now in order to make that productive for the United States?
Sure. So RCEP is a step forward, but it's not a big enough step forward. So what the United States ideally would do would be to rejoin the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That unfortunately doesn't look like it's going to happen, at least under the Trump administration, at least under this president. What the U.S. should do as a second best solution is reach out to some of the countries that we were part of the TPP, that are part of the TPP, and negotiate bilateral agreements with the Trump, which the Trump administration has indicated a willingness to do. Primarily, they should reach out to Japan and try to get a bilateral trade deal done with them, as well as Vietnam. As far as the RCEP, once that is concluded, we should use that as a starting point to build on towards expanded free trade. I think a lot of concern is that the RCEP is writing the rules of the road. Well, it is, but there's no reason to think that those have to be the final rules of the road and that those can't become a starting point for future negotiations to further improve those rules of the road and push for further liberalization.
Will rules that the RCEP puts together this group of Asia-Pacific countries, will the rules that that group puts together, will they be cognizant of the fact that there are these bilateral trade agreements forthcoming?
What's worth noting is that the RCEP countries, there's overlap between some of the participants in RCEP as well as the TPP. For example, Japan is a participant in both, as is Australia, as is a few other countries. And I think there's going to – because of that, there's going to be an interest among those countries for pushing for greater liberalization and using any final RCEP agreement as a starting point to then build further and not regard RCEP as a conclusion to free trade efforts in the Asia Pacific.
You say that any view of China, the China-U.S. trading relationship as zero sum is likely to be counterproductive.
Yes.
What does that zero sum thinking produce when it comes to policy?
Sure.
That would be so counterproductive?
Sure. I think zero sum mentality holds that whenever China wins, it means the U.S. loses. And when you get engaged in that kind of thinking, it means that when China pushes ahead with, for example, efforts like RCEP to expand free trade, there's, I think, an inclination on the part of some in the U.S. to regard that as a threat, because if China is profiting from that, then by definition that's bad for the U.S. When, again, we need to step back and realize that expanded free trade is always good, even when it comes from countries that we don't necessarily see eye to eye with on a lot of issues. I think we just have to keep in mind that the U.S.-China bilateral relationship is arguably the most important economic bilateral relationship in the world today. And we need to stay away from anything that could raise unnecessary suspicions and spark a trade war between the two sides.
What might foment a trade war, and what might that look like a year or so after it begins?
Sure. The biggest risk right now is that we have a president who reportedly has stated when it comes to China that I want tariffs, bring me some tariffs. The Chinese have already made plain that if Trump goes down that route, they will be forced to retaliate with tariffs of their own. And they will do so in sectors that are politically sensitive. They're designed to raise a lot of ire in the United States. And is Trump the kind of president that will then step back and reevaluate, or will he further ratchet up tensions? Unfortunately, I think it might be the latter.
Where might your average consumer see the costs of a trade war? I'm thinking of rare metals and electronics being two areas where that might cause problems. But where would the average consumer see something bothersome?
That's a great question. China makes so much of what the U.S. Consumer consumes, purchases. It runs the gamut. We talk about Apple coming out with their new iPhone 10, and everyone is raise their eyebrows over the $1,000 price. Well, guess how much that iPhone would cost if it wasn't assembled in China? We definitely feel that in our pocketbooks. So I really think it would run the gamut.
What are some populist pro-trade policies that the United States could implement that would have broad support, but also be support an expanded relationship between the U.S. and China and these other Asia-Pacific countries that are part of the TPP?
The encouraging news is that if you look at recent opinion polling, Americans do still express a favorability towards free trade. The concept of it. I think we need to do a better job of marketing it. I don't think that there was a lot wrong with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It could have been improved, yes, but we need to realize the payoffs from this. Opening up countries like Japan, for example, to U.S. agricultural exports, that's a big win. And as well as gaining increased access to cheaper imports, which not only benefit U.S. consumers, but are roughly half of all imports are used as an input for goods which are then re-exported. So I think there's already a lot of wins to be had, and we need to do a better job of marketing that and realizing that and making the argument for it.
At a conceptual level, it is at least bothersome to me that trade is viewed as something where Americans are, for the most part, helpless and are at the whim of other countries deciding whether or not to, quote unquote, dump their cheap goods into America and eliminate American jobs. Can you give some people comfort about how trade actually works?
Sure. I think a great example is if you look at NAFTA, which is currently in the early stages of a renegotiation. Trump loves to talk about NAFTA being the worst free trade deal out there, bashes it repeatedly. What is lost or underappreciated is the fact that when it came to negotiating NAFTA and introducing Mexico into the bilateral U.S.-Canada agreement, which then became NAFTA, Mexico cut its tariffs much more than the United States did. The average U.S. tariff going into NAFTA was somewhere around 3.5%. Mexico was in the range of 7.5%. Why did Mexico cut their tariffs so deeply? It's because of the allure of the U.S. market and the possibility of exporting to the U.S. So we win because the other side cut their tariffs more, which gives us access to their market, and U.S. consumers benefit from cheaper goods imported from Mexico and Canada and other countries.
Steve Bannon, who was until very recently a member of the White House advisory team, he really is pushing this economic nationalism. Is there anything positive that you can say about the idea or some of the tenets of economic nationalism that he's promoting?
Unfortunately, there is not. I think economic nationalism is about paying more and getting less. It subscribes to the misguided notion that everything should be made by Americans, which, as we know from Economic Basics 101, Adam Smith, David Ricardo, the theory of comparative advantage, that is not correct. We should focus our energies on those things which we can do best and let other countries focus on those things which we cannot. It's much better for the United States to design iPhones rather than make or assemble iPhones.
Colin Grabo is author of Responsible Stakeholders, Why the United States Should Welcome China's Economic Leadership. It is available now at cato.org. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast at iTunes and Google Play. And follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.